Welcome to Sociology Sorted, your go-to revision podcast for OCR GCSE Sociology. I'm your host, and today we're diving into one of the biggest, most exam-heavy topics on the entire specification, social class. Whether you're revising for the first time or doing a final check before your exam, this episode is going to give you everything you need. We're talking theories, key thinkers, life chances, measurement scales, and, crucially, exactly how to pick up marks in the exam. So grab your revision notes and let's get into it. First, let's set the scene. Social class is a system of social stratification. That means it's a way society is structured into layers or strata, with some groups having more power, wealth, and status than others. The OCR specification, that's J204, wants you to understand not just what social class is, but why it exists, how it's measured, and what impact it has on people's lives. Examiners are looking for you to use precise sociological language. So instead of saying rich people, say the bourgeoisie or the upper class. Instead of poor people, say the proletariat or the working class. That kind of terminology is what separates a level 1 answer from a level 4 answer. Now let's get into the core concepts. The first big idea is social stratification itself. Think of it as a layer cake. Society is divided into layers. And where you are in that cake affects almost every aspect of your life. Sociologists use the term life chances, a concept developed by Max Weber, to describe the opportunities and advantages that different class positions bring. Your life chances include things like your health outcomes, your educational attainment, your housing quality, your income, and even how long you're likely to live. Let's talk about how we measure social class. There are two main scales you need to know. The first is the Registrar General Scale, which was used from 1911 right up until 2001. It divided the population into 5 classes based on occupation, class 1 being professionals like doctors and lawyers, down to class 5 being unskilled manual workers. It's simple, but examiners will credit you for knowing it's now considered outdated because it was based only on occupation and didn't account for gender, ethnicity, or the growing service sector. The second scale is the NSSEC, the National Statistics Socioeconomic Classification, introduced in 2001 and still used today. It has 8 categories and is much more nuanced. It includes things like whether you're an employer, self-employed, or an employee, and it accounts for the growth of managerial and professional roles. When you're writing about measurement in the exam, always contrast these two scales and evaluate their strengths and limitations. Now, the big theories. This is where the real marks are. You need to know 3 main theoretical perspectives on social class: functionalism, Marxism, and Weberianism. Let's start with functionalism. The key thinkers here are Talcott Parsons, and specifically for social class, Kingsley Davis and Wilbert Moore. Their 1945 thesis argues that social stratification is both inevitable and necessary. The idea is this: society needs certain roles to be filled, surgeons, engineers, teachers, and these roles require talent, training, and sacrifice. To motivate the most talented people to take on the most important roles, society must offer greater rewards. So inequality in this view is actually functional. It serves a purpose. It's meritocratic, meaning people rise based on talent and effort. Now, when you evaluate this in the exam, you need to challenge it. Critics argue that this ignores inherited wealth and privilege. If you're born into a wealthy family, you have access to better schools, better networks, and better opportunities, regardless of your talent. That's not meritocracy, that's reproduction of privilege. Next up, Marxism. Karl Marx argued that capitalist society is divided into 2 fundamental classes: the bourgeoisie, who own the means of production, the factories, the land, the capital, and the proletariat, who own nothing but their labor power and must sell it to survive. For Marx, this relationship is inherently exploitative. The bourgeoisie extracts surplus value from workers, they pay workers less than the value they produce, and pocket the difference as profit. Class inequality in this view isn't functional or fair. It's the result of exploitation and conflict. Marx predicted that the proletariat would eventually develop class consciousness, recognize their shared exploitation, and rise up in revolution. Now, a key evaluation point. Contemporary sociologists like John Goldthorpe argue that the picture is more complex. His Oxford mobility study in the 1970s and 80s found evidence of social mobility, people moving between classes, which complicates the rigid 2-class model Marx proposed. The third perspective is Weberianism. Max Weber agreed with Marx that economic class matters, but argued that stratification is multidimensional. Weber identified 3 dimensions: class, which is your economic position; Status, which is your social prestige or honor. Think of celebrities who are famous but not necessarily wealthy. And party, which refers to political power and organization. This three-part model is more nuanced than Marx's binary, and it helps explain phenomena like status inconsistency, for example, a lottery winner who has wealth but no social status. Now let's talk about two more concepts that come up frequently in OCR exams: embourgeoisement and the underclass. The embourgeoisement thesis, associated with sociologists like Goldthorpe and Lockwood's affluent worker study in the 1960s, suggested that as working-class people became wealthier, buying their own homes, getting cars, enjoying consumer goods, they were adopting middle-class values and lifestyles. The thesis suggested the working class was essentially merging into the middle class. However, Goldthorpe and Lockwood's own research actually challenged this. They found that while affluent workers had adopted some middle-class consumption patterns, their work attitudes, social networks, and political identities remained distinctly working class. So the embourgeoisement thesis was largely rejected. The underclass concept is associated with two very different thinkers. Charles Murray, a New Right sociologist, argued in the 1980s and 90s that there exists a distinct underclass, a group at the very bottom of society, characterized by welfare dependency, family breakdown, and a culture of poverty. Murray blamed this on generous welfare benefits that, he argued, removed the incentive to work. This is a highly controversial view. Critics like William Julius Wilson argued that the underclass exists not because of cultural failings, but because of structural factors: deindustrialization, unemployment, and racial discrimination. Always evaluate both sides in the exam. Now let's talk about life chances in detail, because this is where you can really pick up AO2 marks, that's application of knowledge. The evidence is clear. Your social class position significantly affects your life chances across multiple domains. In education, children from higher social classes consistently outperform their working class peers. Sociologists like Pierre Bourdieu explain this through the concept of cultural capital. Middle and upper class families possess the knowledge, skills, and cultural resources that schools reward. Working class children may lack this capital, putting them at a disadvantage from the start. In health, the Black Report of 1980, commissioned by the government but famously suppressed because its findings were so damning, found stark class inequalities in health outcomes. Working class people had higher rates of morbidity and mortality than professional classes. More recent data shows that men in the most deprived areas of England can expect to live around 7 to 9 years less than those in the most affluent areas. In housing, working class families are more likely to live in rented accommodation, in areas with higher pollution, overcrowding, and fewer green spaces, all of which compound health and educational disadvantages. Now, let me give you some crucial exam tips, because knowing the content is only half the battle. First, command words. When you see describe, you need two developed points with supporting detail. No evaluation needed. When you see explain, you need to give reasons and use sociological evidence. When you see evaluate or how far do you agree, you must give a balanced argument. Present the view, support it with evidence, then challenge it with counter-evidence and reach a clear judgment. Examiners explicitly reward however chains, where you develop a point and then counter it. Second, the 24-mark essay. This is where most students lose marks. Don't just list theories, evaluate their contemporary relevance. Ask yourself, does this theory still hold up today? What evidence supports or challenges it? A top-level response will sustain a line of reasoning throughout, not just jump from point to point. Third, AO1, AO2, and AO3. Remember, OCR weights AO1 and AO2 equally at 40% each, with AO3 at 20%. So for every point you make, apply it to a specific example or piece of evidence, and then evaluate it. That's how you hit all three assessment objectives. Fourth, the difference between wealth and income. This comes up constantly, and candidates frequently confuse them. Wealth is a stock. It's accumulated assets like property, shares, and savings. Income is a flow. It's what you earn over a period of time, like a salary. These are different things, and examiners will penalize you for conflating them. Fifth, absolute versus relative poverty. Absolute poverty means lacking the basic necessities for survival: food, shelter, warmth. Relative poverty means having significantly less than the average standard of living in your society. Peter Townsend's 1979 study defined relative poverty as lacking the resources to participate in the normal activities of society. Always specify which type of poverty you mean. Now let's do a quick-fire recall quiz. I'll ask a question, give you 5 seconds to think, then give the answer. Ready? Question one. What are the two classes in Marx's model of capitalist society? Think the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. Question two. Name the sociologists associated with the Davis-Moore thesis. Think Kingsley Davis and Wilbert Moore. Question three. What are Weber's three dimensions of stratification? Think class, status, and party. Question four. What is cultural capital and which sociologist is associated with it? Think cultural capital refers to the knowledge, skills, and cultural resources that give advantage in education and society, associated with Pierre Bourdieu. Question five. What is the difference between the Registrar General's scale and the NSSEC? Think. The Registrar General's scale was used from 1911 to 2001 and classified people by occupation into five classes. The NSSEC, introduced in 2001, has eight categories and accounts for employment relations, not just occupation type. How did you do? If you struggled with any of those, go back and review those sections in your notes. Right, let's wrap up. Today we covered social stratification and how it's measured, the three main theoretical perspectives, functionalism with Davis and Moore, Marxism with Marx and Goldthorpe, and Weberianism with Weber's three dimensions. We explored how class affects life chances in education, health, and housing, and we looked at the embourgeoisement thesis and the underclass debate. We also covered key exam technique, command words, the 24-mark essay structure, and the crucial distinctions between wealth and income, and absolute and relative poverty. The most important thing to remember going into your exam is this. Every claim needs evidence, every theory needs evaluation, and every answer needs to use precise sociological terminology. Don't write as a member of the public, write as a sociologist. Good luck with your revision. You've got this. I'll see you in the next episode of Sociology Sorted.